Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff, and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about June 6th, 2025. Headline: Supporters of Animal Cruelty Measure Still Hopeful. Written by Jamar Younger and published in the Arizona Capital Times on June 6th, 2025. The supporters of an animal cruelty bill are pushing for the measure to receive a vote before time expires in the legislative session. Senate Bill 1658 is awaiting approval in the House, but the chamber didn't vote on the bill when it was convened on June 4th. That means the House will have to vote when it returns on June 16th, or the bill will likely die this session. If the House approves the bill, the legislation will then return to the Senate for a final vote. By then, however, it may be too late, since both chambers could start advancing budget bills that same week. Representative Walt Blackman, a Republican from Snowflake, said the bill is supposed to be heard when the House reconvenes, but he'll use a special procedural measure to bring it up for a vote if it's not on the agenda. Blackman has been working with the bill's sponsor, Senator Shauna Bolick, a Republican from Phoenix, and the Arizona Humane Society to advance the measure through the legislature. Senate Bill 1658 aims to clearly define suitable conditions for pets and add a misdemeanor charge for failing to provide an animal with medical attention to prevent it from unnecessarily suffering. The measure would also redefine what it means to provide the appropriate food, water, and shelter to an animal. But lawmakers and stakeholders are working to update the language to secure approval from some Republicans who are currently against the bill. Quote, "It is common sense, does not affect livestock, does not affect people experiencing homelessness, very straightforward language," said Humane Society President and CEO Dr. Stephen Hansen. The bill was initially introduced as Senate Bill 1234, but was double assigned to the House Natural Resources, Energy and Water Committee and the House Judiciary Committee after it was approved in the Senate with bipartisan support. Blackman used a striker amendment on another Bolick bill to keep the legislation alive. The bill moved through the House Government and Rules Committees and advanced through the House Committee of the Whole on May 20th, maintaining its bipartisan support. Bolick previously said she spent several weeks advocating for the legislation after House leadership told her that the bill lacked the votes to be approved. Some Republican lawmakers questioned the harshness of the penalties and the clarity of the language. Quote, "The language is just far too vague at certain points where it could potentially criminalize someone who possibly can't afford to take care of their animal properly according to this bill, and this will be someone who actually loves their animal very much," said Representative Rachel Keschel, a Republican from Tucson, during the Committee of the Whole hearing. Hansen said on June 4th that the Humane Society worked with Blackman and Bolick to revise certain provisions of the bill, which would have expanded the definition of cruel neglect to include the failure to provide a pet with food fit for consumption and water suitable for drinking. Quote, "So what we had agreed to is removing the definition of water as drinkable and just that animals require water, and so also removing the food has to be appropriate for the species and edible, so just food," he said. So those are the two big steps backwards. The Humane Society and lawmakers were initially able to keep a requirement in the bill calling for pet owners to provide suitable shelter, but questions arose during negotiations regarding whether the structures had to be sound. For example, legislators would need to determine whether a tent could be considered a suitable shelter. The bill's language has to be, quote, "well-defined," Blackman said. Blackman said the focus will be defining that language as well as other aspects of the bill so it can garner the necessary support by June 16th. Quote, "I've got to crank out that language, make sure it's good to go," he said. Headline: Only 8 of 90 lawmakers have perfect attendance so far. Written by Jacob Thorington and published in the Arizona Capital Times on June 6th, 2025. The end of the legislative session is near, and only a handful of lawmakers have a chance at getting perfect attendance this session. Eight lawmakers of the 90-member Arizona legislature are still eligible for perfect attendance, according to House and Senate attendance records. Only one of those legislators sits in the Senate. Senator Hilde Angius, a Republican from Bullhead City, has been present for each session of the Senate from January 13th to May 7th. Angius also was present during the Senate floor session on May 28th. The seven other members eligible for perfect attendance are all Republican House members. Representatives Lupe Diaz, a Republican from Benson, Lisa Fink, a Republican from Glendale, Nick Cupper, a Republican from Surprise, Tony Rivero, a Republican from Peoria, Michael Way, a Republican from Queen Creek, Jeff Weniger, a Republican from Chandler, and Speaker Steve Montenegro, a Republican from Goodyear. Representative James Taylor, a Republican from Litchfield Park, was eligible for perfect attendance until he missed his first day of the session on June 4th. The lawmaker who has been absent the most days is a House Democrat. Representative Anna Abetia, a Democrat from Phoenix, has 17 absences this session, more than half a month, and has the fewest number of days present among the 60-member chamber. Of those absences, 15 were excused by Montenegro. Abeta says her absences have mostly been related to her 2-year-old child, who often experiences illnesses. Quote, "I will always be a mother first, so when my child is sick, I stay home with her," Abetia said. Abetia, who is also under scrutiny by the Citizens Clean Elections Commission for late campaign finance reports and spending $48,000 of her clean election funds to her fiancé's consulting firm, has been present for 50 days this session. The House has 67 actual days for the session, or days where members actually took the floor. Abetia said during a April 24th Clean Elections Commission meeting that the funds to her fiancé's firm were used for vendor services, including mailers and printed campaign materials. The House sent the Arizona Capital Times its attendance records from the start of the session through May 20th. The House's only additional day of session since then was on June 4th. If a member shows up to the floor at any point during a day that the House is in session, they are listed as present, according to the House's clerk's office. Representative Joe Chaplick has the fewest number of days present among Republicans, having been present for 56 days with 11 absences, 9 of which were excused. Chaplick, a Republican from Scottsdale, was only beaten out for more absences by Abetia and Representative Stacey Travers, a Democrat from Tempe. Travers has been present for 54 days with 13 excused absences. In the other chamber, Senators Jake Hoffman, a Republican from Queen Creek, and Rosanna Gabaldon, a Democrat from Green Valley, are tied with 10 absences each, all excused. Gabaldon has represented present 48 times this session, and Hoffman was present 41 times, according to Senate attendance records. Hoffman was excused and seated 9 times, meaning he was late and still voted, compared to Gabaldon's 2 tardies. Senator Sally Ann Gonzalez, a Democrat from Tucson, was present just 37 times, but she was excused late 14 times and had 9 excused absences. Senators David Farnsworth, a Republican from Mesa, and Corrine Werner, a Republican from Scottsdale, were not too far from Angius's perfect attendance, both having just 1 day in which they were excused and seated, meaning that they were late and still voted. Otherwise, they have been present every day. No senator had any unexcused absences. The Democrat with the most present days in the Senate was Senator Lauren Kuby, a Democrat from Tempe, with 56 days present and 4 excused days late. Representatives Betty Villegas, a Democrat from Tucson, Aaron Marquez, a Democrat from Phoenix, Chris Mathis, a Democrat from Tucson, and Quanta Cruz, a Democrat from Phoenix, had the best attendance among House Democrats. Each member had only 2 days excused. Representatives Sarah Liguori, a Democrat from Phoenix, and Lorena Austin, a Democrat from Mesa, also have only missed 1 day of the session, but both were unexcused. You're listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline: Parents expand their purchasing power in latest draft of ESA handbook, written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on June 7, 2025. Lawmakers proposed cutting any spending limits and expanding the list of allowable purchases in a new Empowerment Scholarship Account Handbook draft submitted to the Arizona Department of Education. Three ESA parents authored the latest homegrown iteration of the handbook with the blessing of legislators and the legal review of staff. Though State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Horn said he would continue to negotiate with lawmakers, he declined to consider the latest draft from parents, noting the department's own drafting process with the ESA Parent Handbook Committee. Quote, "We had an elaborate procedure. We had parents who were chosen in a diverse way with all different kinds of representations. They were chosen to work on the handbook. They worked extremely hard over a long period of time, and they came up with a good product," Horn said. "We can't have random people just throwing handbooks at us." The ESA handbook is an annual exercise in which the department gathers feedback from accounts holders to update program policies with final approval by the State Board of Education. Horn and the State Board of Education have twice tabled handbook drafts due to lawmakers and parents' continued backlash over a proposal to limit prices on purchases like laptops and computers, instruments, and vocational tools. After the last handbook was sent back to the drawing board in April, Horn said he would continue discussions with lawmakers to see to it that the Department of Education gathered more parent input by way of a town hall-style forum. Noise around the handbook has since gone silent outside of negotiations between the department and legislators until last week when ESA parents took matters into their own hands. Angie Faber, an ESA parent and co-author of the latest handbook, said lawmakers, including Representative Michael Carbone, Representative Lisa Fink, Representative Tim Dunn, Representative James Taylor, and Representative Michelle Pena, approached her and Stacy Brown, a former member of the ESA Parent Committee, to draft their own handbook. Major changes include the elimination of any price limits, new language greenlighting any expenses reasonably related to an educational or vocational purpose, and the expansion of allowable purchases in line with that logic. Quote, "As far as we're concerned and as far as the legislators are concerned, the cap is how much we have in our account," Faber said. Quote, "We only get a certain amount of money every year, and we should be able to utilize that funding to see how we fit." Brown noted that the draft went through extensive reviews. Quote, "The handbook was created and brought to attorneys to make sure that everything was lawful and with the intent of the law so that there really should be no other conversation," Brown said. "This is what parents need and what their kids want. This is what the legislature has approved, and this is what the legislature's lawyers have approved. This is a solid handbook. There's no reason for it to be rejected." Carbone said the lawmakers served as a resource in the process. Quote, "We're here to represent them. It's our job as representatives first to represent. Then we have to access the superintendent," Carbone said. "We want a good ESA program. We want to be transparent. That's all these parents are asking for." Horn, who has been an outspoken critic of frivolous spending on the ESA program, said the department was not considering the submitted draft, but said he would continue to work with lawmakers. Quote, "I'm hoping we'll come up with an agreement soon." As work on the handbook continues, deadlines loom ahead. Parents are set to convene at a town hall meeting on June 10th to offer feedback on the handbook. The state board will meet again on June 23rd to consider the handbook, with a July 1st deadline to adopt it. Headline: Dispute over expert testimony pivotal in transgender sports ban. Written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on June 8th, 2025. Disputes over the legitimacy of expert testimony are taking center stage in the legal challenge to the state's ban on transgender girls' participation in girls' sports. The case focuses on two unnamed transgender girls' ability to play on their respective school sports teams. However, it extends beyond the plaintiffs to incorporate a broader argument over whether there truly is a difference between the sexes in athletic performance, especially when taking gender-affirming care into account, and whether those differences pose a danger to fellow athletes or create an uneven playing field. Expert testimony plays a crucial role in any civil case, but the current dispute will determine whether the state can abolish a vested government interest in categorically excluding transgender girls from school sports based on alleged threats of fairness and safety. And those defending the law, State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Horn and some legislative leaders, have lost on the issue before. Judge Jennifer Zips previously granted a preliminary injunction to the law allowing the two girls to continue playing on girls' teams, and she did so with experts and evidence at the forefront. In her ruling, Zips found the defendants failed to advance any persuasive or salient evidence, finding that transgender girls retained any athletic advantage over their peers pre-puberty. As the case queues up again in federal court for a final disposition, so do disputes over whether expert testimony is admissible and, in the end, determinative. Expert witnesses on both sides plan to address the developmental differences or lack thereof between the sexes and the subsequent impacts on athletic performance and fairness in competition. The plaintiffs also offer insight into the psychological impacts on transgender children who are excluded from competing. The plaintiffs are offering three experts: Dr. Daniel Schumer, a pediatric endocrinologist, the clinical director of Child and Adolescent Gender Services, and the medical director of the Comprehensive Gender Services Program at Michigan Medicine; William Shannon, a biostatistician, co-founder and owner of BioRankings, a company providing data analyses and consulting for researchers; and Stephanie Budge, a professor and director of clinical training in the Department of Counseling and Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with a research focus on transgender, non-binary, and gender-diverse populations. Defendants Horn, Senate President Warren Peterson, and House Speaker Steve Montenegro also submitted four experts: Dr. Chad Carlson, sports medicine doctor at Stadia Sports Medicine; Linda Blade, an athletic coach with a PhD in kinesiology and author of a book titled Unsporting: How Trans Activism and Science Denial Are Destroying Sport; Emma Hilton, a developmental biologist at the University of Manchester; and Gregory Brown, a professor of exercise science at the University of Nebraska-Kearney. To be deemed an expert in the eyes of the court, the federal rules of evidence require attorneys to demonstrate that an expert's testimony is based on sufficient facts or data, the product of reliable principles and methods, and reflects a reliable application to the facts of the case. And case law generally charges the courts with excluding irrelevant, unreliable, or unnecessary testimony. Peterson and Montenegro already lost a bid to exclude Schumer over alleged plagiarism after finding an overlap between his report and declarations submitted in similar court cases. Zips denied the motion after finding the allegations did not rise to the level necessary for exclusion, deeming Schumer fit to offer reliable opinions in the case, although she acknowledged that he should have included citations. With one challenge down, attorneys for the plaintiffs are now looking to exclude all four expert witnesses presented by Peterson, Montenegro, and Horn. Plaintiffs argue none of the experts have any experience with transgender individuals, no research specific to transgender individuals, and have no tether to the two plaintiffs in the case. They also take aim at personal opinion and activism coloring their testimony, noting Blade and Hilton's frequent activity advocating against transgender women and girls in sports on social media. Quote, our position is that being transgender is not a proxy for athletic performance or advantage, and there's nothing about being transgender that tells you that. Just knowing that someone is transgender tells you nothing about their athletic ability, Rachel Berg, attorney for the plaintiffs, said. Quote, there's absolutely no evidence that they've submitted to demonstrate that the plaintiffs in our case have had an unfair athletic advantage or pose any safety risk to other girls. Caitlin Fitzmaurice, attorney for Horn, said in a written statement, quote, contrary to plaintiff's motion, defendants' experts are qualified and their testimony will be incredibly invaluable to the fact finder's analysis as to how the Save Women's Sports Act ensures safety and fairness for women in sports. The case now heads towards the final stages, with both parties having submitted their motions for summary judgment with bids to either uphold the ban or permanently enjoin it. The Ninth Circuit upheld the earlier preliminary injunction entered by Zips and is now pending certiorari in the United States Supreme Court. Headline: Governor's Office aligned with Senate Republicans on budget deal. Written by Jacob Thorington and published in the Arizona Capital Times on June 7, 2025. House and Senate members are taking another break while budget discussions continue. But Governor Katie Hobbs says she expects to have a deal completed in the coming weeks. The House adjourned until June 16th after voting on a few bills on June 4th, continuing their pattern of periodic floor activity while legislative leaders negotiate the budget with Hobbs. The Senate also plans to return on June 16th, which gives lawmakers just 2 weeks to get a budget to Hobbs that she'll sign before the end of the fiscal year. Quote, I think we'll do it before the end of the fiscal year, Hobbs told reporters during a press conference on June 5th. Legislative leaders are close to a budget deal, but the House and Senate appear to have some differences in how to spend the approximately $270 million surplus that budget analysts have signaled is available for lawmakers. Hobbs said her office is aligned with Senate Republicans on the surplus, with some differences, but noted House Republicans are not in agreement with the Senate regarding the funds. Quote, it is frustrating that I put out my budget in January, made my priorities clear, and here we are, seemingly playing games, and the House and Senate still not being on the same page when they've had all this time to get there, Hobbs said. House leaders have spoken little about the budget. Steve Montenegro, a Republican from Goodyear, concluded during the June 4th floor session by informing members and the public that budget conversations are still ongoing, but did not elaborate any further than that. Montenegro was not available for comment after the House finished its business. A House GOP spokesman said the House could return sooner than the June 16th timeframe if a budget is agreed to before then. The Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman, Senator John Kavanaugh, a Republican from Fountain Hills, confirmed to the Arizona Capital Times that the House and Senate are divided on the budget. Quote, this is the first time the House did not negotiate in tandem with the Senate, so I don't know what they're doing, Kavanaugh said. Kavanaugh confirmed a plan reported by Axios that would divide the approximate $270 million nearly evenly between the governor's office and both legislative chambers. The House and Senate would each receive about $90 million, while the governor's office would get more than $90 million. Budget analysts initially projected a $612 million surplus in January, but they attributed the lower estimate to ongoing federal uncertainty stemming from tariffs and tax cuts in April. Axios reported on June 3rd that the disagreement between the two chambers lies with how the legislature would spend its share of the money. Senate Republicans plan to take a similar approach from 2023, when both the House and Senate GOP caucuses designated a portion of funds for each of their members to spend as they saw fit. House Republicans don't want to replicate 2023, where that budget was criticized for containing pork and personal projects for individual lawmakers. Instead, they want to pool their money together for larger infrastructure projects. Kavanaugh said he's not worried that the budget will be delayed and force a government shutdown. He said he's confident that the budget will be signed before June 30, with the legislature adjourning sine die a day or two later. Chuck Coughlin, CEO for High Ground Consulting, called the 2023 budget process, quote, a missed opportunity for the state to address education, housing, water infrastructure, and mental health care. Quote, you dilute your ability to address those by a strategy which diminishes the ability of the state to address those problems by essentially handing out earmarked appropriations, Coughlin said. Last week, a Maricopa County Superior Court judge ruled that a $15 million appropriation to the Prescott Rodeo Days in 2023 was unconstitutional. That appropriation was the result of Prescott area lawmakers pooling their funds that they were given during the 2023 budget process. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you for listening.